I'm very pleased to welcome back to View from the Roundhouse, Professor Martin Drum. Welcome back, Martin.
It's great to be here, Michael.
Martin, I'm a child of the 50s. They'd sell me in a mid-century shop very quickly because I was born in 1950. And I've always been a globalist, I realized the other day, Martin. In 1960, the year I turned 10, I wrote a letter to Chairman Nikita Khrushchev, who ran the USSR in those days, not to discuss politics, as it turns out, but to see if he could send me some stamps for my photo album. And not long later, I received a letter from the Soviet Socialist Youth Organization saying they were very pleased to do that and send me a bunch of stamps. Little boy in Wheatbelt, Western Australia. I think Australians have always had this view of the world that it's out there and we should go and discover it. And Anthony Albanese, our Prime Minister's sort of been acting on that. He's just completed, Martin, a 6-day diplomatic visit to China, spanning Beijing, Shanghai, and Chengdu. And he's been criticised, I can't believe it, for being sort of indulgent or self-indulgent. Don't we, Australia, need to be in China, particularly at the moment, Martin?
I've been utterly mystified about this as well, I've got to say. Now, there are plenty of things you can criticise prime ministers and governments about, and no one should be immune, of course. But criticising the prime minister for going and visiting our major trade partner, the one our trade partner that has a big say in whether our economy grows and expands or not, in an environment where we have come out of a poorer relationship with them. You remember several years went past where not a single minister of ours spoke to a senior member of their government. And then, of course, at that same time, a whole range of trade that was blocked and all sorts of problems that emerged from that. So that's, if you think, not that this is just about Western Australia, Michael, but WA is a very trade exposed economy here in our state. But the whole of our country is a trade-exposed economy. So it just does mystify me. I know people routinely will talk about security issues, human rights issues involving China, and that's all well and good, and it's not about ignoring those things. But certainly few of us would probably countenance us not having a good professional relationship with the country. And if you want that and you go over there and prosecute that, I can't see how that's a bad thing. And if he wants to go and visit the Great Wall of China, good on him. How's that a bad thing? I think it got criticised for being on a working holiday. It just sort of mystified me. I thought it was petty, but I also thought it was interesting because the same people that were criticising him were pushing him to do the same thing for the US. Maybe a meeting with Trump would help. I don't know. My sense with Trump is that we're no different to 100, 150 other countries in how that's going. He's a deal maker, but he wants to make deals that suit the US, not anyone else. That's good. That's all. Well, that's his prerogative. But surely it's still not a bad thing to go to China. I just found that really bizarre myself.
Well, I can't help but agree with you. Australia's whole economy has, for some decades past, depended on our trading relationships with China, and people really shouldn't forget it. Chinese haven't and don't. He met the top people while he was there. Martin, President Xi Jinping, that was their fourth bilateral meeting. They're becoming old mates. He also met the Premier, Li Qiang, who was in Australia, I don't think, all that long ago. It was the third of their meetings. And he also met the chairman of the National People's Congress, Chairman Jia Liji. So big time. It's not as if he was just given a chance to meet the third ranking person down the ladder in the Pentagon to talk about AUKUS or something. This is significant stuff. And surely at every level. And why shouldn't we be talking about security issues with China?
Well, that's an excellent point. It's not just that he went there, he met most of their most senior people, including President Xi Jinping. I think he had about 2 hours with him. So it wasn't just a, hi and bye either. So I think that's a productive, positive thing. Nor did he sell the government down the river, or the country down the river, so to speak. Could we say that he suddenly caved into Chinese demands on the South China Sea? No. I couldn't discern anything that where he where you could say compromised our security relationships, etc. So it was just a bit fascinating there, that level of critique. I think it's having that strong relationship with both China and the US, ultimately, if it's possible, is in Australia's interest.
I found it fascinating that the media who were talking up for the purpose of the visit a backlash from China over Australia trying to take back from Chinese hands the port of Darwin. It wasn't a murmur, it seems, out of the Chinese.
No, look, and if you're saying that Albanese is not tough enough on security, well, the Port of Darwin is apparently one of the major, probably the most significant piece of economic and security infrastructure that the Chinese have. So in clawing it back, you can hardly say soft in that area, because it's a major step. But of course, China wouldn't allow us, I wouldn't think, to own infrastructure like that. So I think that it would be a bit hard pressed for them to critique us for that particular step. So I think the other thing is, apparently there were calls from the US for us to clarify our position on Taiwan, which I thought was rather extraordinary as well, because the US hasn't clarified their position on Iran, and sorry, Iran, on Taiwan. So that would be bizarre. US has a policy of what's called strategic ambiguity, which is a fancy way of saying they haven't told China what they'd do if China attacked Iran. And here I go again, if China attacked Taiwan. So if they're not telling anyone, why would they expect us to suddenly put our neck out like that?
I think everyone's always understood the diplomatic language. You don't say you're going to go in and have a fight. And depending on what happens in the world, you may or may not have a fight. But coming back to the economics of it all, Martin, have the same self-indulgent critiques been provided in respect of the top executives from BHP, Rio Tinto, Fortescue, Hancock Prospecting, and a bunch of others who turned up for some of these roundtable meetings in China?
Look, those companies, they know where their bread is buttered. There's no doubt, they're eager to jump on the trip, to turn up, to be at the table, to say their piece, etc. I can't really blame them in that respect. You can make other critiques of mining companies, but surely going and powdering up to your major investor, or not so much investor, but client, is a pretty common sense thing to do.
Well, Martin, as you say, apparently this was some sort of eco-tourism venture as well by the PM. Like many of us, he found his way to the Great Wall of China. Not his first time, I don't think. And that's a symbolic nod to historical ties. I think there's photographs of Gough Whitlam pottering along the wall and many, many years ago. He also went to the Chengdu Panda research base, so that's always a good photo opportunity, Martin. And something that would really resonate in Australia, he went to the cochlear implant factory in Chengdu, showcasing Australian medical tech success in China. I mean, they just seem like sensible human, let's get on with people and not maximise our differences, but try and optimise what binds us, Martin.
Oh, very much so. I think that that's, that this is, it's about, you've got, we've, Australia is a small country in and of itself. It does need to project itself. It does need to engage. And it also needs to engage with a diverse range of entities. It can't put all of its eggs in the one basket. So a smart strategy is diversifying ourselves. Probably one thing that we did do before things went sour with China is that there were a number of industries that relied too heavily on China, to the exclusion of other investors or countries and markets. So one of the things that we do need to be mindful of economically is that whether it's the US or China or somewhere else, I think it's helpful for us to have a diverse range of relationships.
Martin, might be a good time just to remind ourselves of what was Gough Whitlam doing there all those years ago. Went there before Nixon and Kissinger from memory. What was the significance of all of that at the time?
Yeah, so Gough Whitlam was ahead of his time in a number of different ways. And he famously went to China and recognized the People's Republic of China before others did, and engaged in a whole range of diplomatic meetings, including the most senior echelons of the Chinese government. So this was a big risk because he was going ahead of the US and a range of other countries. And he was criticized roundly for it, I've got to say, Michael, as well. But fast forward 30, 40, 50 years, and how does that look now? We have access to the Chinese market in a whole range of areas. A lot of our export industries rely on it. We receive a whole range of goods from China. They buy our key entities. No one now suggests that we shouldn't have a relationship with China. But certainly at that stage, that was highly unusual. So reminds a little bit of Paul Keating, Michael, who really consciously went out of his way to say that we are we are part of Asia as well as having sort of European strong European links. And likewise, Paul Keating got criticised heavily for his charge into Asia. But how does that look 40 years on?
Well, it's all part of Australia's trying to do their best to not just present themselves to the world as though they're simply white Europeans in a foreign land who only relate to their old colonial master, Britain, and their major military support, the United States. I mean, Whitlam first visited China in July 71. He was still a leader of the opposition. And he turned up just as Kissinger was secretly arriving there as well to pay for the visit for Nixon's tour there. I mean, they were historic times, but I think we live in the same sort of historic times. What do you think will come out of this recent visit? What sorts of diplomatic, trade, cultural activities do you think we might see as proof, if you like, that this is a sensible thing to do?
I think there's a lot of talk about enhanced cooperation, and President Xi actually named six different areas. Don't ask me to recite them all. I don't have them all in front of me, but one was AI that I think might create some reservations here in Australia. But there was another four or five that I thought, well, this is absolutely areas that we would look to collaborate more. So he actually went out on a limb, President Xi, and named some areas for collaboration. So I think that there will be some really positive outcomes over time. One Prime Minister's visit doesn't change everything. We just talked about Whitlam's being a big step, yes. Albanese's visit is not the only element in that picture, but it does actually represent, I believe, that a fairly concerted effort by the government to rebuild those links. To consolidate them. Some people have pointed out that the Chinese foreign policy now is more consistent, clearer to understand, easier to discern than the US's at the moment. So you probably know, they argue you know what you're getting. I'm not quite down that path in the sense that I think we always think about Australia's interests and maintaining that with any foreign relationship. But I do believe that having healthy bilateral relationships with our major partners is a sensible idea.
It probably isn't hard to predict that the partnerships dealing with climate and green energy and steel decarbonisation and the like, Martin, are more likely to happen with China than the US at the moment.
Yeah, this is the problem we will have unless things with Trump settle down is to invest money and to create facilities to develop good partnerships. They might be 5, 10, 15-year projects. So to enable that to happen, you need to have confidence that the policy settings are consistent and will continue. I suspect this is part of the problem with the Trump's tariffs. If they jump around endlessly, will manufacturers actually come to the US and make long-term investment decisions, as he's hoping? And how will the other exporters go when it comes to trading with the US? If I've got an export-related focused business, and if I'm seeing that the Trump dis the tariff discussions jump around endlessly, I might just go, well, this is all too hard. I'll just go elsewhere. I just don't know what I'm getting. So at some stage, they're going to have to settle down and become the consistent settings. Otherwise, people just keep looking elsewhere. I mean, the US is a powerful economic entity, so they've got that on their side, but I think people still believe, still want stability and consistency.
Martin, I'm sure behind closed doors, President Xi will have asked Prime Minister Albanese, what on earth's going on in Tasmania? They're about to have an election on Saturday. What's it all about and what's going to happen?
Let's come back to this, Michael, because I think we canvassed this, or it would have been about a month ago, maybe actually a bit longer, the debacle in the Tasmanian Parliament, where the sitting Liberal government suffered the indignity of a no confidence motion, where the opposition Labor Party teamed up with crossbenchers, independents, etc., and passed a motion of no confidence in the Premier. Serious matter indeed, that would either should trigger either the resignation of the Premier, or his preference, going to the governor and calling for an election to restore confidence in the government. That the latter option was the Premier Rockliffe's preference. He went to the governor. The governor deliberated for a while, heard from the opposition leader, etc., and then agreed to call an election. And we're seeing polling that's almost certainly looking pointing towards another hung parliament in Tasmania. A little bit on Tasmania's system, Michael. They have what's called the Hare-Clark electoral system, and that's a form of what we call proportional voting. It does increase the likelihood of hung parliaments because you don't have single member electorates that are won quite as frequently by Labor and Liberal. There's opportunities for Greens and Independents and other parties. The Nationals are charging back into the fray. Not quite sure how they'll go after a break in Tasmania, but there they are, and there's a host of other Jackie Lambie and others that routinely try their hand down there. There's a couple of high-profile independents. Federal MP Bridget Archer is seeking to enter state politics. I think she'll do pretty well, by the way. So there's a lot of interesting parts to that mix. I think probably in what we're seeing on the polling, it's pointing towards another Liberal minority government, which could experience some of the same issues. There might be an element. Labor Party, according to polling, appears to be going backwards from its previous position. I wonder whether the punters in Tasmania are unhappy with the Labor Party for pushing them to an election that they may see as unwarranted. The thing about the no confidence motion was it wasn't pushed because there was a really discernible, clear, complete breakdown in government or